Hello, and welcome to Whole Food Plant-Based Nutrition. This is your volunteer programmer, Babs Felix, in Green Valley. At Whole Food Plant-Based Nutrition, we would like to offer you information to improve your health by considering various lifestyle options. Our articles come from different sources, which we will always identify. The information presented is for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not intended to replace the advice of your medical doctor or other healthcare professional with whom you consult. Here are some articles on whole food plant-based nutrition. And the first one comes from Healthy World Sedona in their December 2024 issue. On their Get Cooking page, the article is entitled Celebrating Chickpeas by Bev Bow. This little round bean has been with us since humans first moved from being hunter-gatherers to agriculturalists in the Neolithic period. The first evidence of their domestication by people dates back to 8400 BC in what is now Syria. These humble little legumes have been with us since before England was cut off from Europe by sea level rise. They were here when beer was invented, when copper and bronze metallurgy started, when the wheel was invented, when the pyramids were built in Egypt, and when Buddha lived and died. Still popular in Middle Eastern countries, they are now part of the cuisine in South Asia, Portugal, Spain, contributing the garbanzo name, France, Italy, Mexico, and the U.S., as well as many other countries. Wherever we have traveled in the world, the one thing we could count on was finding chickpea hummus in almost any grocery store. There are so many uses for these delicious beans. We use them in cold salads, mashed, and mixed with pickles, onions, celery, and tahini as a sandwich filling, in soups, stews, curries, and of course, in hummus. They are inexpensive to buy, canned for convenience, and I always keep a couple of cans on hand. But mostly, I like to cook the dry beans. I pre-soak a large quantity for 8 hours or more, drain, rinse, and then cook them in the Instant Pot for 11 minutes. They always come out just right. We put them in glass canning jars and store them in the freezer. If you don't have an Instant Pot, you can cook them on the stovetop until tender, generally 1 to 2 hours, depending on how long they have soaked. If flatulence from beans is a problem, you can skin them after cooking to reduce this effect. The skins, which are a great source of fiber but not easily digestible, slip right off when fully cooked. This is a bit more time-consuming, but it may be worth it if it allows you to eat them with comfort. As well as all the great recipes you'll find for the beans, you can also get a gluten-free flour made from the dried beans. And of course, there is aquafaba, the cooking liquid which can be whipped up into a meringue and flavored to your liking, or used like whipped egg whites in cooking. Did I mention that these beans are incredibly good for you? 100 grams provides at least 20% of the daily value of protein, dietary fiber, folate, and minerals, such as iron and phosphorus, as well as 10 to 16% of thiamine, vitamin B6, magnesium, and zinc. And a short one also from Healthy World Sedona. New research finds that women who eat nutrient-dense, plant-rich diets age slower. This study, published in the journal Current Developments in Nutrition, found that women who eat a nutrarian diet exhibited slower biological aging, as well as lower markers of inflammation. A nutrarian diet developed by Joel Furman, MD, emphasizes cruciferous vegetables, beans and legumes, the onion and garlic family, mushrooms, berries, nuts, and seeds, and avoids or minimizes animal foods, oils, and refined carbohydrate foods. Researchers on the study included our Flagstaff friends, Dr. Jay Sutliff of Northern Arizona University and Chloe Sutliff. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff, bringing you whole food, plant-based nutrition. And next comes a success story from Forks Over Knives. A life-threatening stroke spurred me to try a plant-based diet, and I've never looked back. By Mike Lewis, November 5th, 2021. Growing up in southeastern Pennsylvania, I was a pretty active kid. I lived for playing outdoors with my brothers, Brian and Bobby, and our friends. I loved playing baseball and ice hockey. I started working out in my late teens and carried that into my 20s. But in my 20s is when I began abusing my body, learning to cope with stress through poor dietary choices and overconsumption of alcohol. I went from being a fit 21-year-old at 175 pounds to being an unhealthy, depressed 25-year-old at 230 pounds. In 2014, my brother Bobby introduced me to the Forks Over Knives documentary film. A few weeks prior, after watching that film and Food, Inc., he had decided to try a whole food plant-based diet. Even though he'd been on the diet only a short time, he already had begun to swear by it. I wondered how it could be so much healthier than a standard American diet. Plus, how could you live without meat? How could you live without dairy? And where would you get your protein? I brushed off my brother's suggestion, instead trying supplements, bulletproof coffee, keto, and other diets that ultimately led me down an even darker path. My weight went up and down as I tried all these different methods for weight loss. At one point, I read The Omnivore's Dilemma by Michael Pollan, which opened my eyes to the problems with factory-farmed meat. I started eating grass-fed meat, thinking it was healthier. I even went so far as to start working in the butcher shop at a farm-to-table restaurant. Although I'd started to be more mindful of what I ate and tried to incorporate more fruits and vegetables into my diet, my meat intake probably tripled at that point. In 2017, I moved away from my family and relocated to Florida for work. I started to become a little more active, taking up yoga and mountain biking more frequently. Unfortunately, I also started overeating, binge drinking, and spending 8 to 12 hours most days sitting at my desk and stressing out. I was not putting my health first, and my family knew it. but I just wasn't ready to make the changes that my body was screaming at me to make. I still felt that I was young enough to get away with it. Stroke, seizure, and the aftermath. On October 13, 2019, I developed an intense headache. It was strange. I don't normally get headaches, but I shrugged it off as a seasonal allergy. Side note, if you ever have an abnormal headache like this, go see your doctor immediately. A week later, on Sunday, October the 20th, I went to pick up dinner from a local Turkish restaurant. As I put my credit card back into my wallet after paying, my left arm started to shake uncontrollably. I was having a seizure. I remember everything vividly until a few seconds after I hit the ground. There happened to be a server working that night who knew what to do for someone having a seizure, fortunately. So she rolled me on my side, put a pillow under my head. Despite her efforts, I still aspirated, but there's a very good chance that I might have died on the scene if it weren't for her. I might have died had the seizure happened just a few minutes earlier when I was behind the wheel of my car. Undoubtedly, I had someone watching over me that night. I was rushed to the ICU, where I was hooked up to a ventilator and given a series of tests. The doctors determined that the seizure was the result of an ischemic stroke, which they concluded was from lifestyle, which was poor diet, too much alcohol, too little physical activity, and a high-stress job. My family rushed from Pennsylvania down to Florida as quickly as they could so that they could be at my bedside, coming to the grips with the fact that I might be dead by the time they got there. If I did survive, what would I have to live with permanent damage to my brain or organs? Would I have more seizures? Could I ever be healthy? Could I ever live on my own again? So many overwhelming questions. It was the lowest point in my life, no doubt. A plant-powered recovery. I am blessed to have two amazing sisters-in-law, and even more fortunate that one of them, Elaine, is a top trauma surgeon and functional medicine practitioner. Elaine oversaw and managed my care during my five-day stay in ICU. After being discharged, Bobby, Elaine, and my mom joined forces to facilitate my recovery. They got me to start eating more whole plant foods and to cut out coffee to help lower my blood pressure. My body started to respond immediately. After a couple of weeks, they convinced me to go to Asheville, North Carolina to begin my rehab under the guidance of Elaine and Bobby. The idea was to walk away from daily life stresses and focus on relaxing and learning to eat well. That's when I first opened up to the idea of eating a whole food plant-based diet. I figured that I'd commit to it for a month or so. I felt I owed it to my family as a way to show my appreciation for their support. Much to everyone's surprise, I was feeling well enough to go mountain biking within a week on my new diet. This was just 3 weeks after my stroke. It was truly shocking, especially given how hilly the Asheville area is. I was even out doing Bobby on the trails. After that first amazing ride, I realized how blessed I was to be alive, to be able to talk, walk, do yoga, and mountain bike. I couldn't put my family through another near-death experience. I never wanted to have another stroke. I was done with filet mignon, coffee, cheese, Chick-fil-A, alcohol, and all the other stuff that had made me sick. I'd always thought that I couldn't live without them, but it turned out that I almost died because of them. I committed to making a whole food, plant-based diet a permanent fixture in my life. 2 years later, plant-based and thriving. I have been whole food plant-based for about 2 years now. I am happy to report that I am down to 150 pounds from 200 at the time of my stroke, and I'm thriving. This experience has brought me closer to my loved ones and given me a deep sense of gratitude for life and the things that I enjoy doing. I competed in my first mountain bike race in June and finished in 13th place. I'm aiming for the top 10 next year. On top of all the physical benefits, this journey led me down a path that helped me to find the girl of my dreams, Rachel. I don't know where I would be without her support, her care, her smile, her inspiration, or her cooking. I wish that it didn't take a stroke for me to stop ignoring the red flags and abusing my body. If you're reading this and struggling with poor lifestyle habits, I hope this inspires you to take your self-care more seriously and that you can make a change before you and your family have to go through something like what my family and I did. I'm deeply grateful to the company that I work for, my friends, my girlfriend, my family. With their love and support, I've journeyed from the lowest point of my life to the highest. You are listening to Whole Food Plant-Based Nutrition, coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. Next, we'll turn to nutritionfacts.org with an article entitled Junk Food in Hospitals by Michael Greger, MD, November 26th, 2024. Why is hospital food so unhealthy? Put in stark terms, cardiovascular disease, or CVD, claims one American life every 39 seconds and is responsible for more deaths annually than cancer, chronic lower respiratory disease, and accidents combined. For most heart attack deaths, you just keel over. Sudden cardiac death is the first manifestation of coronary heart disease for the majority of individuals, particularly among women. So for many of these sudden death victims, their demise was the first indication of the presence of coronary heart disease. They did not even know that they had heart disease. That's why an ounce of prevention is worth way more than a pound of cure, because there is no cure for death. That's also why the prevention of sudden cardiac death remains a major public health challenge, because most people don't even know that they're at risk. However, we've known for more than half a century, when we first started autopsying young servicemen who died during the Korean War, that coronary artery disease begins in our youth, even among young children. So business as usual simply is not going to yield the improvements necessary to radically improve the cardiovascular health of the United States and around the world. There is good news, though. A low-risk lifestyle, which includes not smoking, exercising regularly, having a prudent diet, and maintaining a healthy weight, may be able to eliminate the vast majority of the risk for sudden cardiac death. The time is now long overdue to start aggressive, preventative cardiovascular disease programs in our schools, our homes, and our work sites. How about starting in our hospitals? A significant percentage of hospitals surveyed had fast food restaurants inside them, with Krispy Kreme topping the list. Brilliant marketing, given that families surveyed at hospitals with McDonald's were twice as likely to think McDonald's was healthy as compared to families at hospitals without McDonald's. After all, McDonald's was in the hospital. What about food served in hospital cafeterias? Any better? Researchers analyzed 384 entrees from 14 children's hospitals in California, and only 7% were classified as healthy. And just in case someone chose the rare healthy option, 81% of the eating venues in children's hospitals had junky, high-calorie impulse items such as ice cream freezers, cookies, and candy at or near the checkout register. And 38% had signs encouraging unhealthy eating. Why would they do that? If you ask hospital cafeteria managers, less than a quarter, 4 out of the 17 of respondents, reported that the hospital followed nutrition standards for food offered in the cafeteria. Nutrition is not a top priority. It's the same reason unhealthy food is sold everywhere else. Pressure on food service departments for cafeterias to generate profit. Increased emphasis is placed on running a hospital food service department as a profit center, a bigger and bigger profit center, that is. It's such a metaphor that our sickness care system in general, where healthy treat the cause approaches are eclipsed by pills and procedures that bring in the most money. What do you expect from the private sector? Public hospitals don't seem to be much better. A 2019 analysis of veterans hospitals found that all VA hospitals contain vending machines providing a majority of soda, candy, and junk foods that directly conflict with healthy food choice recommendations from the U.S. governing health bodies. Such that, ironically, hospital visits could theoretically promote worse health. An important question that should be posed is why are any soda or candy machines available at our VA hospitals? Are we trading the health of our veterans for profits? Maybe it's time to ban junk food on hospital premises. On daily rounds, it is appalling to see patients gorging on potato chips, candy, sports drinks, and cola, the very food items that may have contributed to their admission in the first place. It is obscene that many hospitals continue to have fast food franchises on site, as well as corridors littered with vending machines selling junk food. Such practice legitimizes the acceptability and consumption of such foods in the daily diet. The obesity epidemic represents a public health crisis, but it is a public health scandal that by legitimizing junk food hospitals have themselves become a risk factor for diet-related disease by perpetuating the revolving door of health care. It's time to stop selling sickness on the hospital grounds. What message do residents receive when they are fed pizza and soda at grand rounds? We need a healthcare system with more Hippocrates and less hypocrisy. You have been listening to Whole Food Plant-Based Nutrition, coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. This is your volunteer programmer, Babs Felix, in Green Valley, wishing you a happy and healthy rest of your day. And now, stay tuned for more programming coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.